I'm just gonna do this because it's the news according to me. As far as you know. Yeah, good morning. I hope it's a good morning wherever you are. I know that there is, just want to take a moment this morning to talk about what's happening in Florida. And we'll get into the politics of it in a little bit, but initially, I just know that I've got some friends that live down there, family that lives down there, family that has property down there as well. The Sarasota area, Tampa Bay area, not quite hit as hard as Fort Myers and Naples were. And I used to spend a lot of time in Naples. I had a former employee back in the 90s that had an office down there. And we used to go back and forth there quite a bit. So I just know the area very well. It's a beautiful area, by the way, Naples is. And I like the whole Gulf Coast side of things there. It's Siesta Key is kind of one of my favorite places to hang out. When I was a kid, I used to go down there. Back when I was, even when I was just like 10, 11 years old, my grandpa had a summer home down there in the Pinecraft area, which if you know anything about that Pinecraft area, I'm not going to tell you any more bradenton that. But it's near Sarasota, Bradenton area. And we'd go down there about every year around Christmas time. And the Siesta Key was one of my favorite beaches. It always has been. Back in the day, Siesta was a beach that was very little known in the world. And it had a little parking lot that held maybe 30 or 40 cars, maybe at the most. In fact, I think when it first started, there was just like this little public parking lot with beach access that it probably held 20 cars. There was nothing around there at all. Of course, now it's built up and there are hotels everywhere, condos, all kinds of stuff around that area. Because it was featured as one of the top 10 beaches in the world at one point. Powdery white sand, just fluffy white sand. And of course, they started having volleyball tournaments there and all kinds of stuff. So it has built up drastically. I think they can probably park 1,000 cars there now where all the lots are. And it's always full. And that area is really just, it's just amazing. But the sad part about this is that the devastation, I think, is still yet to be seen. Now, leading up to this whole thing and as the hurricane was approaching, there was a lot of politics going on. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But I just want you to know that our hearts and our prayers and our support is behind those who need it down right now in Florida. I know this is one of those things where I don't understand how people knew this storm was coming days ahead of time. A lot of people stayed. And of course what's going to be the death toll is unknown right now at this point because they just don't know what they don't know yet. They can't even get rescue vehicles into some areas yet. Sadly, there was a reporter down there, a very awkward guy, and he's interviewing some people. You know, this one lady, and she's carrying things out in a garbage box thing. Some things. She just lost her husband a couple months ago to cancer, and now she's trying to pick up some of her belongings and records and that kind of thing from her home. He's interviewing her, and it's a little awkward. Anyway, people are asking him for water. Of course, they don't have any communication because the cell phone towers are down and a lot of things are out. Power's out everywhere. So that's an issue. Now, take note of these things. When you see this kind of disaster happen, what would you do? How would you respond? And how well prepared are you? these people had time to get prepared. Now, I don't know. Maybe they didn't have time to buy water. Maybe the water supply was, you know, the bottled water supply was bought up and they just couldn't get any more. But they're asking for water. Water's, you know, you can't live very long without water. You can live quite a while without food. Water, you kind of need. Next to air, it's like the next best thing. It's drinking water, that is. And it's tough to see people going through this kind of thing. I live in an area that is not prone to any kind of disasters. However, that doesn't mean one's not going to happen. I'm not, I don't have a sponsor for this show, and I'm not a doctor or a lawyer or a politician, or I'm not a plumber or a financial counselor. I am a big proponent of things like, you know, food supply type stuff, type places. And I'll just mention one that I've had good service from is my Patriot Supply. Now they're delving off into some other areas as well now, but they do provide you with ready to, you know, not ready to eat, not MREs, but they are, you know, freeze-dried food things. That supposedly will last for 25 years. Now, 25 years from now, if I open up that thing and it's not good, I don't know if I can take it back or not. That's 25 years from now. So that's a little bit tough with that. I'm sure I'll lose a receipt. However, the chances of it potentially being good 25 years from now are pretty good, you know, better than nothing. And it's not so much that I've got the, I don't buy this stuff for the sake of saving, you know, if the price of food goes up, that's one thing. If the ability to get food becomes, you know, a problem, now it's not a matter of how much does it cost, it's a matter of is there any at all. If you got a bag of gold, will it buy a loaf of bread? There's no bread to buy, so it won't. So it's more of a disaster type relief thing, and I've thought about, you know, some people buy precious metals. I have probably more money invested in food storage than I do in gold or silver. I do have a little bit of those things, but and it's not just about me. It's not just about me being able to feed myself because we don't have kids, so it's not like I've got a family to deal with. Just my wife and I. And the thing about it is I have neighbors. And, you know, we have means, we have ways of, you know, we have funds, at least at this point. We have actual real wealth, which is, we're not in debt up to our elbows. And as most of the country is. So what we have is ours, and we're able to, and I have a lot of things here, that a lot of skills and a lot of things here that I can barter and trade with. I don't think my neighbors are in that kind of situation, and I want to make sure that it's not just about me, it's about the community here that we have. I'm sure we're going to be leaning on each other for various things, and we're going to need each other in a situation like this, what everybody's going through down there. Now, sadly, you know, a lot of people move out. You know, you don't have a neighbor because they're gone. They took the wise route. In this case, it was wise, and they left. Now, leading up to this whole thing, I just want you to know. I can't stress that enough. I just want you to know that if you're in Florida right now, and you know people down there, or you're able to get messages to people, just to let people know that the nation is waiting to see how we can help. And we're ready to dive in and help in any way we can. And especially with our hearts and our prayers and our support for you. However, having said that, politicians know this all too well. They know that the American people are generous and they're willing to dive in and provide support and aid, and they're going to get behind a bill. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a little bit. I'm going to get ahead of myself here. Prior to the storm, Ron DeSantis, the governor down there, didn't get a call from the president for quite some time. He was calling Democrat mayors. Of course, DeSantis was calling the mayors as well. The president was calling these, I think, three different mayors that he called. But he has a hard time distinguishing, you know, who he's talking to. So he thinks he's called the governor four or five times. White House said he called DeSantis twice. Now, leading up to the event, he called the mayors first, never called the governor until the storm hit, my understanding. Then he decided to call the governor. And of course, all he would talk about was how, the governor's really thankful for, you know, me calling him and taking care of him. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. But the whole thing about this is the petty immaturity that we see from this White House shouldn't shock me at all. Because this is who they are. I've said this many times. We're dealing with a bunch of 10-year-olds. Probably 8-year-olds trying to act like 10-year-olds. The petty nature of that. You know, the mature person is the one who has the ability to think past the politics of this whole thing and do what's presidential. Respect the office that he has and call the governor. There are people on the left in high places who are saying, they're talking to the storm. They're saying, Ian, you had one job. And what they're referring to is that Mar-a-Lago is still standing. They wanted it to be destroyed. They thought the storm was going to take out Mar-a-Lago. That is just petty, vindictive childishness. The vitriol and the hatred and the just the destructive derangement that they have in their head is off the charts. It is mass hysteria. You know that in the process of destroying that building, you're going to be taking out lives. Because there's people who live there, they work there. They don't care about that. And they don't care about what's in my cup. I have chai, vanilla chai with vanilla creamer, but I have a backup cup this morning. It's just sweet tea, but it is a backup cup. I haven't even tasted this. Let's see if it's any good. I guess it is still good. It's actually sweet tea. I believe this is from. My sweet tea. I guess it is. I have a variety of sweet tea right now. I've got a cup of sweet tea from Culver's. I have a cup of sweet tea from McDonald's. And then I have my sweet tea. And I also have a gallon of sweet tea, or I have what's left of a gallon of Milo's sweet tea, which is the stuff I bought at the grocery store. My wife bought at the grocery store. It's actually pretty good. Not bad. The politics of this thing. Now, here's what's going to happen now. I guarantee you, they're all talking about global warming and how global warming affected the storm. And Republicans didn't vote for this billion-dollar bill that they proposed here a while back for climate change. And of course, that's why we have this hurricane. These people are insane. It's absolutely ridiculous. The number of storms we've had have decreased. They can't deny that, whether they try to. These storms just these superstorms just seem to be increasing in intensity. Not necessarily. The damage that's caused is that because back in the 70s, there weren't even a million homes probably in Florida. There may have been, I don't know. There's now like 7 million homes there. Maybe more than that, I guess. I don't know, probably something like that. The level, the increase in homes there is, of course, it intensifies, and that just makes any storm more of an issue. The last storm that hit, that went up through towards the Sarasota area that was any significance actually was, my mother-in-law was still alive. She still had her home down there. And I think they were down there at the time. This was just 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that. And it pretty much petered out by the time it got to St. Sarasota. Sarasota and the Tampa area rarely get hit head on with a hurricane. It's been very rare for that to happen. The southwestern part has been hit a few times. The East Coast gets hit due to the rotation of a storm in the northern hemisphere. The lower half, below the eye, is the one on the East Coast that gets hit the hardest with storm surge. On the East Coast, it's the northern part of the storm, because it turns counterclockwise. So it's blowing all that water into and piling up on the shore on the northern part of the eye, or the upper part of the eye. Now, supposedly this storm is turning back into a hurricane again. It's expected to hit Carolinas probably in the next few days. The intensity probably will not be anywhere near what it was. Hard to tell. But here's what's going to happen politically now with this whole mess. They're going to introduce a bill for relief from Hurricane Ian Relief Fund for Florida. You watch what they do with this bill. There are three main things. One is, of course, the relief fund itself. It will go to organizations. They will streamline and speedline the ability for these funds to go to certain organizations that are relief organizations that will pay out about a tenth of what they get. The other 90%, and this is right before the election. Remember this. These funds are going to go into election funds. I guarantee you, all of a sudden, Democrat candidates down there will all of a sudden have all these funds available to them. It's just all of a sudden, look at all the giving that's going on. All these givers, all these organizations are giving to my PAC fund. Whatever it is. So that's that money sloshing around. Then you have money that will go to, well, part of this bill, I guarantee you, part of this bill, they're going to introduce, because they're just all making a big, ridiculous scene of this whole thing. There will be global warming legislation within this relief fund. It's not going to be a standalone bill. They don't do that anymore. They're even having a hard time now doing that with Ukraine funds, which I guess now we're up to like $65 billion that we've sent to Ukraine. That's way more than the entire Russian military has in its budget for the entire year. We've already sent them more money. And of course, I guess they're just making like bombs out of the money. They're just taking the money and making little paper airplanes, lighting them on fire and throwing them back at Russia. What are they doing with all the money? Where's all the money going? I guarantee you, they got to be buying something with it, right? I mean, they got to pay their military, obviously, but they also have to buy something. Are they buying weapons? What are they buying? And it's estimated now that not even half of the weapons that are being sent there are making it there. They're being traded all over the place. But I digress. I'll get away from that right now. Let's go back to the whole Florida thing. So I guarantee you they're going to include things in this bill, in this relief fund, that will also be involve global warming. And it's going to be legislation like banning electric car or banning gas-powered cars and forcing people to buy electric cars. All kinds of things like that. They throw that kind of stuff in there. Well, that way, if a senator or a congressman votes against this bill, oh, you voted against? This is it's very popular right now to provide support to Florida, right? So they'll jump on that bandwagon. They'll throw other things in there that people wouldn't vote for by themselves. This is the way the game is played in Washington. I'm just assuming that people know this kind of stuff, but I shouldn't assume this kind of thing. It's called pork. What they do is they throw this pork in there, which means, yeah, everybody wants this bill that will, because everybody's behind this bill to do such and such, to build something, to build a road or build whatever it is. Well, in that bill, they will also throw in something else, like, and then you also have to have schools that teach this or do that or whatever this other program is, or they also have to include this auditorium over here or whatever it is. So that goes through, and people won't vote against it. They want to vote for the funds for the relief fund. If they vote against it, all of a sudden they make a big deal out of you voted against the relief fund. Well, then what the other side also does is if you vote for something because it has the pork in it, they'll come back and say, "Well, you voted for this." Well, that's not what I was voting. You threw that in there. I was voting for this other thing. You threw this other thing. Well, but you voted for it. That's how the game is played. They'll make a villain out of you, so you can't win either way you do it. That's why Dr. Ron Paul was called Senator No, or Congressman No. I think they called him Congressman No, Dr. No, because he voted no on almost everything in Congress. And what he would do, and they tried to vilify him for this as well. So what they would do is he would calculate out how much, when he knew a bill was going to go through, like he was going to be the only one who was going to vote no for it anyway, he would throw into the bill pork that would provide, he would look at all the funds, basically he would calculate out how many funds, how much of his constituents' money, the people in his district, was going to be taken in taxes. And he would throw that bill in, that pork in with the bill to make sure that all the money, all the funds that came out of his district got spent in his district. Pretty smart cookie. I mean, think about it. That's pretty amazing, actually. I would never have thought of that. So all the money, instead of leaving his district to go pay for some federal program, the people in his district got the benefit of those dollars that were spent. At least there was some reciprocation for that. Of course, then he got vilified. You voted against it, but you put pork in there. Yeah. That was to protect my constituents. Taking their money from them. At least they're going to get something for it. Instead of it just being vaporized off into la-la land out there. So what ends up happening with this is they're going to put a whole lot of pork, a whole lot of other things in there that they're going to try to include into this bill. And you watch, they'll probably even try to put legislation in for the LGBTQ thing with the whole legislation. They're going to try to ban the legislation federally from the top down. They'll do something down there to screw up Florida and to push DeSantis back. You want the funds? You got to do this. Got to comply here, or we're not going to give you the funds. That's the way it's going to be. They do use this stuff like a wedge. Now, on the other thing that they're going to include in this bill is going to be funding for programs in Florida that will be very easily manipulated by the powers that be, that will go into again, it goes back to campaign funding. You have to understand how important it is for these people to remain in power. You see, we're seeing it kind of on its surface right now. It's kind of bubbling up to the top where they're saying, well, if we lose, we're going to lose our democracy. If we're not in charge, if we're not the ones who are in power, the country has fallen. We are the only ones holding the Constitution together. We're the only ones that they hate the country. They hate the Constitution. And yet they claim to be the ones who are the only ones upholding voter rights and women's rights and health care rights. If the Republicans take over, it's all going to go away. We've lost our country. The radical terrorists have taken over. And that's what they've done now. They've vilified to the point, even within the FBI now. See, the FBI has become a political machine. I don't know any other way to describe it. The DOJ and its power over the FBI and the other organizations that be. I don't know if you've heard, one of the games that they're playing right now is this whole thing with, so everybody who was on the Capitol Mall, basically, on January 6th, they're using January 6th as a, well, this was an attack like 9/11, so we can use this with the powers that come along with the Anti-Terrorism Act and all the other stuff that happens out there and the Patriot Act and all this stuff that gives them special powers. What they've done is some of the things that they've done around this whole thing, like I'm not even getting, should I even get into it? I don't know. If people were standing around in the areas that were public areas that you were allowed to stand around in, they actually changed the lines after the fact, retroactively, went back and changed the lines. If you were within this close of the Capitol building, you were now trespassing. Even though you were within the public area, if you were there and you didn't do anything, you didn't stand, you didn't move any gates, you didn't do anything, if you were there within a certain distance of the Capitol, you are now trespassing and they're going to come after you. Now, what they're doing with this is, of course, they allowed all those people to go all back to, you know, everybody went back to their home. So what they're going to do now is they go out to Minnesota and they find somebody who was there, who walked into the Capitol building because they were either waved in or because the doors were wide open and there wasn't any signs there. They just walked in. Well, you were there, so you were trespassing. You broke the law. You're a terrorist. You're a MAGA terrorist. So that's, now they can go out to Minnesota and they can indict you, or they can subpoena you. They can arrest you. They can charge you, whatever they're going to do. And what they do with that is they use that as a statistic. Now, look at the terrorist activity all over the country. We have terrorists all over the country. Minnesota, Ohio, Kansas, Arkansas. These terrorists are everywhere. All because you traveled into the city and you were there that day. They can make the statistics look like terrorism, domestic terrorism is on the rise. This is all part of their game. It's all part of their thing. And it's all a lie. It's a horrendous, hideous lie, actually. You think about how deceptive this is. I don't know. I don't know where it goes from here. We have the other thing that the FBI is doing right now. We've got these whistleblowers. Of course, now Adam Schiff was all about protecting the whistleblower. I think he said whistleblower about 32,000 times during the time of when Trump was in office, when they had this one whistleblower. They had to protect his identity, and they were all concerned, and he didn't even say his. He just said, we have to protect the whistleblower's identity because we have to protect the identity of the whistleblower. Went on and on and on with this. Well, all of a sudden, where's Adam and Schiff when we have like 30 whistleblowers now with the FBI? that have come forward and said that the FBI is being weaponized. It's going out and doing these things, all in the name of January 6th. That gives them a license. All they have to do is say, well, January 6th, domestic terrorism. You got this semi-fascist, you know, this MAGA crowd. These were president's words. They're dangerous. They're going to destroy our democracy. Yeah, they're out there waving their flags and talking about God and country. That's a warning sign. This Christian nationalism, it goes hand in hand with white nationalism. Saw a movie last night called Super Spreader. It's a documentary by Sean Foyt. It was good. It was better than most YouTube videos. It's probably going to appear on YouTube at some point, I would think. But it really showed he didn't back down on some of the interviews he did with some people who were Christian leaders. I put Christian in quotations. Some of the biggest opposition he got, the most vitriol opposition he got, was from Christian leaders. Fairly big name people, too. Now, I was glad to see some of the people that were interviewed that obviously were supporting him, it just almost brings tears to your eyes just thinking about it, how they just radically, some of the radical people who just were full on 100% supporting him and encouraging him along the way. And everything he went through in this whole process of the group organization, the movement was called Let Us Worship. He went around all over the country during COVID and was in 2020 and was leading worship events outside. And it was fascinating just to hear some of the responses that some Christian leaders gave. The one in Chicago, when he was in Chicago, I actually saw some people that I knew in the crowd there that were there for the worship thing. Chicago was an interesting case. The mayor cracked down on them pretty hard and told the police they had to shut them down. They could not do anything with any loud music. Couldn't have amplifiers. It took basically two other equipment. They couldn't get their equipment out, couldn't plug it in, couldn't do anything. There were a few police officers that actually gave them the bullhorn, the police bullhorn, to make announcements to the people, quote, announcements to the people, so they got to preach. They got to share their message. And I would be surprised if some of those police officers still have their jobs because of that. We'll see how it goes. But and of course, they were praying for the police. You don't see that with Antifa. You don't see that with BLM. Oh, we're out here praying for you. No, they don't believe in prayer, folks. Antifa is an anti-God organization, actually, by the way, and it's also, so is BLM. Black Lives Matter is not a Christian organization. They do not believe in the Christian tenets of the faith. In fact, there was one individual who was being interviewed who supposedly is a Christian. I mean, the name of his church, calls it a church. They've gotten so far away from the Judaic roots of the faith that they're not even, I wouldn't even call them Christian anymore, but they see Christianity, he sees Christianity as a white man's imperialistic colonization religion. Here's one little clip of Billy Graham in there that back in the day, in the early days of Billy Graham's crusades, he spoke out against communism very strongly. And the lines were drawn a little bit clearer back then, because even traditional Democrats were not communists then. What the Democrats didn't realize at the time was that they were on the road to communism. Socialism and communism go hand in hand, by the way. You can, you know, people say, oh, Marxism and Leninism and Stalinism are all different. Yeah, they are, but they're not. It's all collectivism in any form. It takes on many different shapes and sizes, but it's collectivism nonetheless. And the United States is one of those, the only countries, or few countries anyway, that has given people the sovereign rights of liberty as an individual. It is a rare and exceptional thing. It is the exception and not the rule. When we say we have an exceptional country, it doesn't mean, oh, we're better than everybody else. It doesn't mean that. It means that we are the exception in terms of the way this country was founded, was that it was for of and by the people, and we have our individual rights, and we're sovereign in our personal property and things. And you can't take those things away without due process, due representation, not just by legislation. Legislation's different than due process, by the way. If Congress votes that, well, nobody can have a cell phone. No, I'm sorry. That's not the way it works. You can't take away my property without due process. That means I get to have my day in court, not you decide as a court what everybody else is going to do. Doesn't work that way. This is how Roe v. Wade got tossed out. Supreme Court said, we don't have the right to do this. We don't have the right to give you this right or to restrict this in any way. This goes back to the people. It goes back to the states. And even they can't do anything that's unconstitutional. They can't force you to have an abortion. That's unconstitutional. So, in the process of all of this, the movie went on to talk about how everything that they went through in the process of going through this whole thing. And it was very interesting. And of course, now there are court cases being won after the fact. You know, churches are suing their governments, their state and federal governments, and they're winning. Supreme Court ruled on one. They ruled that they were right. State overstepped its bounds. California was probably the biggest offender in churches out there. Now, getting back to politics in the White House and some of the things that are going on. There's so many things going on right now. Kamala Harris. A couple more word salad events where she just talked and talked and talked and didn't say anything. Very embarrassing. Talking to the Japanese prime minister and she'd said nothing. And then we had the issue of Joe Biden recently. I haven't talked about this. Jackie Walorski lived not too far from where I live. It's a few miles away. In my district, she was our representative in Northern Indiana in Congress. She died in a tragic car accident about a month ago. And she was in the process of, there was a bill that she was working on. It was a food, like a hunger bill of some sort, hunger aid type thing she was working on. And it was a bipartisan effort with her and a few other congresspeople, I think one other Republican and two other Democrats. Biden was recently at a service where they were commemorating this whole thing and talking about the signing of this bill or whatever it was. I can't remember what it was and what kind of service it was. And he mentioned her name. He said, well, Jackie, you know, he mentioned all the other people. He said, and is Jackie here? Jackie's not here. Oh, she's not going to be here. I guess she couldn't make it. What? Are you... Are you aware at all? Now, of course, when confronted by this, KJP in the press room was asked about it by several reporters, and not just Republican or not just conservative reporters, as you might want to call it that. Well, she was top of mind. She was top of mind. Apparently not. When someone's top of mind, that means they're on your mind all the time. You're aware of the fact that they're gone. My mother and my father are top of mind quite often some days. I have no doubt that they're gone. Top of mind. Not at all. She was not at all top of mind. Of course, he doesn't know where his mind. Maybe what she was trying to say was he had no mind. I don't know. I don't know what she's trying to say by that. And she answered the question. The next person asked the same question, and she was kind of frustrated and upset with the person for asking the same question. I've already answered that question. So she said it again. She read it from the little script. And then somebody else asked the question. That's not an answer. They said, that's not an answer. What is going on with him? They can't keep hiding this, by the way. He's getting worse. And the stuff comes in waves. What I've noticed with people with dementia, Alzheimer's, kind of the brain issues that he's having, it happens in waves. They'll be fine for a month, and then all of a sudden they start declining again. And usually it happens, if you know anything about how an airplane stalls, like an airplane loses its engine, it kind of nose drops, it builds up speed, it kind of levels off again, the nose drops again, and it levels off again. It might even go back up a little bit. Nose drops, it builds up speed, it kind of, until it finally hits the ground. So we have this issue of stability. And it each time, usually the dip is usually worse. And he's becoming more unstable. He's losing his grip, folks. I'm surprised he's made it this long. They must have some really good drugs out there. There was a recent report of a new drug that came out that is apparently an Alzheimer's drug. It reduces the decline of Alzheimer's patients by 27%. And that's a huge amount. When you stop to think about it, it may not seem like much, but that is a huge amount. And it also apparently diminishes the plaques that are in the brain that seem to be associated with Alzheimer's as well. So I'm not sure. And I know physical exercise is a big deal with regard to brain health. I have tried my best to be more physically active, aerobically. It's anaerobic and aerobic fitness are very important when it comes to brain health. You can diminish and stave off a lot of brain issues with physical exercise, not just weight training. Weight training is good for your body in terms of strength and keeping your tendons strong and your bones strong to reduce the risk of injury. However, brain health is very closely associated with physical activity. Not just doing puzzles. Despite what some of the people say who make puzzles, there is no correlation study-wise that says that you increase your brain. It's a good reference to see where your brain is at, how what your cognitive skills are. But the actual event of, or learning something new, it's a new skill. Say you want to take up, leather work, or you want to take up some kind of, want to build watches, or you want to do something different. Taking up a new skill like woodworking or metalwork. That kind of thing, or you want to, say you want to make, you want to work with clay. Whatever it is. Gardening. That kind of thing, when you take up a new skill like that, that does help your brain, actually. When it's physical activity tied to a learning event. But just doing a puzzle doesn't necessarily do anything for you. There's no evidence of that anyway. It's inconclusive. Physical activity does. It's absolute. They have done study after study on that. And it is absolute. Let's get back to the FBI a little bit. So the FBI is weaponizing things, and they're going after conservatives. They're going after... They're basically vilifying anybody who has anything to do with, as a Republican, you are basically, you're an enemy of the state. When President Biden made this comment, and I don't think very many people caught it, when he said that the MAGA Republicans are a clear and present danger, that term, if you ever saw the movie by Clancy, Clear and Present Danger, I think it might have had Harrison Ford in it. I'm not sure. Was he Jack Ryan? I don't know. Or is it Baldwin? I don't know who it was. Whoever it was in that movie, Clear and Present Danger. Let's look it up here real quick. See who was in it. Movie, Clear and Present. Clear and Present Danger cast. Let's see who was in it. The one guy was in it that was the president. It was a 1994 movie. And, it was Harrison Ford. Willem Dafoe, Ann Archer. Who is the president guy? Was it Henry? Yeah, Robert. No, here it is. President Donald Moffat. He was the president. Old guy. The gist of the story was that there was action going on down in, it was either Central America or South America. And this, at one point in the movie, he said, this presents a clear and present danger to the United States. Well, that gives him, it gives the presidential authority to act militarily. Clear and present danger, that term, I believe it's in the Constitution, it gives the president authority. Let's say all of a sudden a ship off the coast of Carolina launches an attack on the U.S. Well, it's a clear and present danger. Whether it's preemptive, whether they're about to launch the missiles or they've launched the missiles, we don't have time for Congress to vote on something to declare war. Clear and present danger means the president has the right to act as commander-in-chief immediately. A declaration of war is not needed in that case. However, to declare war on the ship that attacked us, or the country that attacked us, whose ship it was, does require a declaration of war by Congress. It would happen pretty quickly, I bet. Now, that has not always been the case. They can declare the war, and it has to be funded and all that other kind of stuff. You know, there has to be funding for a presidential action like that. This is where people have gone after George Bush Jr. and said that, you know, they've claimed that the Iraq War was illegal. Probably was. That's what the whole thing was. The whole concern was about whether or not they had weapons of mass destruction or not. Well, there's a lot of countries out there that have weapons of mass destruction. It was a tangled up web of who knows what. But they had to justify the attack somehow, so they had to go after them. And basically, what it amounted to, and George Bush even admitted this, they tried to kill my dad. This was personal for him. Not just personal, but it also boosted the military-industrial complex. But it just so happens that the VP happened to work for Halliburton for a long time, had a lot of stock in Halliburton, was made rich by everything that Halliburton did, and Halliburton is one of the biggest companies for the industrial military complex. So yeah, it was personal, all right. This is the same Cheney family that Liz Cheney comes from. It's her dad that was VP. Speaking of Liz Cheney, this reminds me of somebody who holds a knife to their throat and threatens to, if you don't give me what I want, I'm going to kill myself. Oh, okay. Have a nice 30 seconds of your life or however long you're going to give yourself there, because you're not getting anything. Sorry. I'm not giving you this. Whatever it is you're asking for. That's how ridiculous. Listen, if Donald Trump becomes the nominee, I'm leaving the Republican Party. Oh, scary. Why don't you just leave now, Liz? Just leave. You're making a big scene here. It's just stupid. You're a Democrat now, okay? And I think somehow she thinks she's going to run as a Democrat and win. She thinks she's going to run for president. This is what's going to happen. She's going to end up running for president on the Democrat ticket. They will make mincemeat out of her. They're all patting her on the head right now because Trump. They found a Republican that didn't like Trump. Oh, you're our hero. But you're still a Republican. You're not part of the crowd here. We might be patting you on the head right now, but we're patting you on the head from a ladder up here, 6 feet tall. And we're way down there. Just like this whole DeSantis thing. Well, we need to have DeSantis run instead of Trump because Trump is too divisive. Who's doing the dividing? Look at what they're doing to DeSantis now. They're personally trying to sue him for sending people to Martha's Vineyard or, you know, bussing these people around. Oh, I got to go after him. No, you can sue the state of Florida. You can't sue Ron DeSantis personally. Trying to get him on criminal charges. Kidnapping. You just don't do that. But again, the end justifies the means. They don't care whether it's legitimate or legal or a part of our tradition or it's some kind of banana republic thing. We are in a civil war right now. A war of information and legal lawsuits. And of course, we've got people like Mazie Hirono who are saying this is literally a call to arms. And then within weeks, you have a pro-life lawyer being shot to death. A call to arms. Well, who called people to arms? Did you ever hear Trump say that? This is a call to arms. I want you to march down to the Capitol. It's a call to arms. Pull out your guns. We know you got them all. You know you're all armed. According to Liz Cheney, you're all armed. You're mad, and you're armed. And I'm sending you down to the Capitol to kill my Pence. He said that. That's what he said. I'm pretty sure that's what he said. According to Liz Cheney, that's what he said. If he didn't say it, he meant to say it. If he didn't say anything like that, well, he had it in the speech originally, but he was doing it in code. He was like blinking with his eyes and sending Morse code out to people to tell them that's what was going on. That's what was happening. That's how ridiculous these people are. It's insanity. Now the FBI is purging conservatives from their ranks. The military was doing an investigation for the MAGA crowd because they were all concerned about radical Trump supporters within their ranks. If you were in the military and you supported Trump, you're on the chopping block right now. If you're at the FBI, now, the one whistleblower, the main guy who came out first, has been demoted. Almost all the whistleblowers have lost their security clearances with the FBI, which is the first step in getting rid of them. They're in the process of getting rid of them. They're going to oust them. The whole whistleblower rules are supposed to protect them from this kind of action, punitive action against them. I don't care. They're the DOJ. Who are you going to go to? Who are you going to report them to? The DOJ. But it's the DOJ doing it. Well, we're going to investigate ourselves. Yep, we're okay. Yep, they can go. We're firing them for other reasons because he stole a stapler. He misused his stapler. He stapled these three papers together and he wasn't supposed to do that. We're firing him. That's what's happening right now. And now they're purging, they're going to try to purge the, they're saying conservatives on some of the news media shows I've seen, that they're trying to get rid of all the conservatives out of the FBI. They're trying to purge them. However, it probably goes further than that. It's probably like anybody who's ever said anything positive about Trump. It's probably got to have the word Trump involved in there somewhere. Just because you're a supporter of Trump doesn't mean you're necessarily conservative. There are plenty of people that are out there that I wouldn't consider. There are even some liberals, traditional liberals, who were in support of Trump. Now you have somebody like Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz, who's a lawyer, defense attorney lawyer. I think he's actually pro bono defending Trump on some things, because he said he doesn't like Trump. He didn't vote for Trump, but on the sheer principle of the thing, he's got to defend him. Because defending Trump, you're defending every single individual out there. Because as Kennedy said once, JFK said, if the rights of one man are threatened or diminished, I think it's, if the rights of one man are diminished, the rights of every man are threatened. This was the traditional Democrat view of the Constitution and individuality. When groupthink and group rights started to come into this whole thing, was supposedly when the parties flipped. It wasn't a flip at all. It was a different way of using minorities and special interest groups. They're still using you. Oh, you don't believe me? Look who's at the top of them. Look who's leading us. As I said, things are getting more desperate. They're going to use this hurricane to their advantage in the next election, because the money's going to flow. They need the money right now just to be more powerful. If Federer wins, I just tell you, Fetterman or whatever his name is, beats Oz, this is going to be it's unbelievable. Just amazes me they can't put up a better candidate. Okay, the guy had a stroke. That doesn't mean he had a stroke, poor guy. Let's just make him senator anyway. No, it doesn't work that way. He should be stepping down. Look, I had a stroke. I'm not functioning in my full capacity. I can't hear well. I can't communicate well. It's part of the job. So I'm just going to step down and let somebody else step in here. No, he's not doing that. He's got, because they have a death grip on power. Their agenda must not be stopped. Well, folks, it is Friday. I realize that. Shabbat shalom. And I don't mean that cynically. I do mean peace to you over the weekend, because it is, we need it, especially those of you in Florida. Later on today, I'm going to be calling my friends in Florida and seeing how they're doing. But most of them up are in the Tampa area. I don't think Tampa was hit very hard. However, it was hit. And I'm sure that there's some damage and some issues there. One of them lives on a boat in Tampa, actually, so he was, it'd be interesting to see how things are going for him. Folks, I hope you have a good weekend. Monday morning, I will probably not have a show early in the morning. It's possible, but not probable. I have an early morning departure on Monday morning, and then I'll be in Atlanta. So I might get the show done in Atlanta in the afternoon. Other than that, every day next week is going to be a show in the morning from Atlanta. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend.